Chapter 80. The following day, Garrick Courtney announced his intention of contesting the Ladybird seat as an independent. But not even the Loyalist newspapers gave him an outside chance of winning. Until 6 weeks before polling day. On that evening, long after dark, Dirk hitched Sundancer at the rail outside the hotel. After he had loosened the girth and slipped the bit from her mouth, he left her to drink at the trough and went up to the sidewalk. As he sauntered past the bar, he peered in through the large window with its golden red-lettered slogan, "Got a thirst? Drink a Goldberg beer." Quickly, he checked the clientele at the bar for informers. There were none of his father's foremen. They were always dangerous. Nor were Messrs. Peterson or Pye or Erasmus present this evening. He recognized two of the factory mechanics, a couple of railway gangers, a bank clerk, a counterhand from the Cooperative Society, among the half-dozen strangers, and he decided that it was safe. None of these ranked high enough in Ladybird society to carry news to Sean Courtney of his son's drinking habits. Dirk walked to the end of the block, paused there for a few seconds, and then strolled casually back. But his eyes were restlessly checking the shadows for tail carriers. Tonight the main street was deserted, and as he came level with the swing doors of the bar, he stepped sideways through them and into the warm yellow lamplight of the saloon. He loved this atmosphere. He loved the smell of sawdust, liquor, tobacco smoke and men. It was a place of men, a place of rough voices and laughter, of crude humour and companionship. A few of the men along the bar glanced up as he entered.
"Hello, Dirk. We missed you. Where have you been all week?"
Dirk returned Archie's greeting self-consciously, and when he walked to take the stool beside him at the end of the bar counter, he held himself erect and swaggered a little, for this was a place of men.
"Good evening, Dirk. What'll it be?"
the barman hurried across to him.
"Hello, Henry.
Is it all right tonight?" Dirk dropped his voice to a whisper.
"It should be. We aren't expecting any snoopers,"
Henry reassured him.
"But the door behind you isn't locked."
Dirk's seat in the corner had been selected with care. From it he could survey each newcomer to the room while being screened himself by the drinkers along the counter. Behind him, a door led through the wash-up into the backyard, a necessary precaution when you're 17 and both the law and your father forbid you liquor.
"Okay, then I'll have a drink. Give me the usual," Dirk nodded.
"You're out late tonight," Henry remarked as he poured gin into a tumbler and filled it with bottled ginger beer.
"You been out hunting again?"
Henry was a small man in his early 50s, with a pale, unsunned face and little blue eyes, and now as he asked the question he winked one of them at Archie Longworthy.
"Did you get it tonight?"
Archie took over the catechism. Dirk laid a finger along the side of his nose.
"What do you think?"
He grinned, and they all laughed delightedly.
"Who was it then? Madame?"
Archie drew him out, playing for the other listeners, who were leaning forward, still chuckling.
Oh,
Dirk shrugged contemptuously. Madame was the code name of the wife of one of the railway drivers. Her husband ran the night train to Pietermaritzburg every alternate day. She was not considered much of a conquest.
"Well, who then?"
Henry kidded softly.
"I'll let you know when I'm finished nesting there myself,"
Dirk promised.
"A pretty one," they insisted. "Young, hey?"
She's all right. Not too bad."
Dirk tasted his gin.
"Man, you get so much you don't hardly appreciate it any more,"
Archie chided him, grinning at his audience, and Dirk bridled with pleasure.
"Oh, come on, Dirk, tell us, man. Is she hot?"
For answer, Dirk extended one finger cautiously and touched his glass, hissed sharply as though he had touched red-hot steel, and jerked his hand back with an exclamation of pain. They roared with appreciation, and Dirk laughed with them, flushing, eager for their acceptance.
"Come on, give us the story,"
Henry insisted.
"You don't have to give us the name, just give us the details. Where did you take her?"
"Well," Dirk hesitated.
"Oh, come on, Dirk, tell us about it."
And of course he obliged, telling it in detail, so that the indulgent quality of their laughter changed and they leaned closer to him, listening hungrily.
"Jesus, did she say that? Oh, then what did you do?"
they encouraged him. And Dirk told them. He was a natural storyteller, and he built up the suspense until there was a small island of attentive silence around him. But the rest of the barroom was louder with laughter and voices than it had been when he entered. One group in particular were feeling their liquor.
So I took her hand, Dirk went on, and I said, Now I've got a little surprise for you.
What is it? She asked, as though she didn't know.
Close your eyes and I'll show you, I told her.
And a voice rang loudly from across the room.
Oh, you take that big ugly bastard Courtney. What does he do except drive around in a big motor car and make speeches?
Dirk stopped in the middle of a sentence and looked up. Suddenly his face was pale. The man who had spoken was one of the group at the far end of the bar. He was dressed in a shabby overall of blue denim, a man no longer young, with the lines of hardship etched deep around his eyes and mouth.
You know who gives him his money? I tell you, we give it to him. Without these, he'd be finished. He wouldn't last a month.
The man held up his hands. They were calloused, and the nails were split and ragged, encrusted with dark semicircles of dirt.
That's where he gets his money. Colonel Bloody Courtney.
Dirk was staring across at the speaker. His hands lay clenched on the counter in front of him. Now, suddenly, the room was very quiet, so that the man's next words seemed even louder.
You know what he pays? £32 a month, top journeyman's wages. £32 a month!
Well, the minimum rate is 25, one of his companions observed dryly.
I reckon you're free to move on to a better job, if you can find it. Me, I'll stay on here. That's not the point. The big idle bastard's making a fortune out of us. I reckon he can afford to pay more, I reckon.
Do you reckon you're worth that much?
Dirk jumped up from his stool and shouted the question down the length of the counter. There was a stir of interest, and every head turned towards him.
Leave him, Dirk. He's drunk. Don't start anything, Henry whispered in agitation,
and then raising his voice and turning to the other.
Hey, you've had enough, Norman. Time you were on your way. Your old lady'll be waiting dinner for you.
Good God!
Norman was peering in Dirk's direction, his eyes focusing blearily.
Good God, it's Courtney's pup!
And Dirk's face set into nervous rigidity. He began to walk slowly down the room towards the man.
Leave him, Dirk, leave him.
To restrain him, Archie caught his arm as he passed, but Dirk shrugged it off.
You insulted my father, you called him a bastard. Yeah, that's right, Norman nodded. Your daddy's a bastard, right? Your daddy's a big, lucky bastard who's never done a full day's work in his life. A big, lucky, blood-sucking bastard. And he's whelped an equally useless pup who spends his time...
Dirk hit him in the mouth, and he went over backwards off the stool, flailing his arms as he fell. He hit the floor with his shoulders and rolled onto his knees, spitting blood and a broken tooth from his mouth.
You little bastard!
He mouthed through the blood. Dirk stepped forward with his left foot and swung his boot with the whole weight of his body behind it. The toe of his boot thudded into the man's chest and flung him onto his back.
Christ, stop him! Shouted Henry from behind the bar.
But they sat paralysed as Dirk stooped for the bar stool, lifted it above his head, and then brought it down, swinging his body with it as though he were chopping a log. The heavy wooden seat hit the man in the centre of his forehead. It hit solidly, for the back of his head was against the floor and could not give way the blow. It split his skull cleanly, and twin spurts of blood shot from his nostrils into the sawdust on the floor.
You've killed him!
A single voice broke the long silence that followed.
Yes,
Dirk agreed.
I've killed him. I've killed a man. It sang within him savagely. It came up and filled his chest, so that he could hardly breathe,
and he stood over the corpse, not wanting to miss a moment of it. He felt his legs trembling under him, the muscles of his cheeks so tight with excitement, they felt they must tear.
Yes, I killed him!
His voice was choked with the violence of the pleasure that gripped him. His vision narrowed down so that the dead man's face filled the whole field of it. The forehead was deeply dented, and the eyes bulged from their sockets. Around him there was a sudden bustle of consternation.
You better send for his father. I'm getting out of here. No, you stay where you are. Nobody must leave. My God, call Doc Fraser. Doc's not wanted. Get the police. He was so quick, like a bloody leopard. Christ, I'm getting out of here.
Two of them stooped over the body.
Leave him, snapped Dirk. Don't touch him.
Jealous as a young lion of its kill, and instinctively they obeyed. They stood up and moved away. With them, everyone else drew back, leaving Dirk standing alone.
"Get his father," repeated Henry. "Someone ride out and call Sean Courtney."
An hour later, Sean strode into the room. He wore an overcoat over his nightshirt, and his boots had been pulled hurriedly over his bare feet. He stopped on the threshold and glared around the room, his hair in wild disorder from sleep. But when he entered, the atmosphere in the room changed. The tense silence relaxed, and every face turned eagerly towards him.
"Oh, Mr. Courtney, thank God you've come,"
blurted the young police constable who was standing beside Dr. Fraser.
"Oh, how bad is it, Doc?"
Sean asked.
"He's dead, Sean."
"Pa, he insulted—"
Dirk started.
"Shut up!"
Sean ordered him grimly.
"Who is he?"
he fired at the constable.
"Norman van Eck, one of your fitters from the mill."
"How many witnesses?"
14 of them, sir. They all saw it."
"Right," Sean ordered. "Get the body down to the police station. You'll be able to take statements from them tomorrow morning."
What about the accused? I mean, what about your son, sir?" the constable corrected himself.
"I'll be responsible for him."
I'm not sure that I shouldn't, he saw the expression on Sean's face.
Well, that'll be all right, I suppose," he agreed reluctantly.
"Pa!"
Dirk started again.
"I told you to keep your mouth shut. You've done enough damage for one night,"
Sean spoke without looking at him. Then to the barman.
"Fetch a blanket,"
then to the police constable.
"Get some of them to help you,"
and he pointed towards the window, which was lined four deep with curious faces.
"Very well, Mr. Courtney."
After they had shuffled out with the blanket-wrapped body, Sean glanced significantly at Dr. Fraser.
"I'd better get down there, complete my examination."
"You go ahead,"
Sean agreed, and the doctor packed his bag and went. Sean closed the door behind him and slammed the shutters across the window. Then he turned to the men who stood anxiously along the bar.
"Well, what happened?"
They stirred restlessly and looked everywhere but at him.
"You, George?"
Sean selected one of his mechanics.
"Well, Mr. Courtney, your Dirk went up to Norman and hit him off the stool. Then he kicked him as he was trying to get up. And then he picked up the stool and hit him with it."
The mechanic stumbled hoarsely through his explanation.
"Did this man provoke him?"
Sean demanded.
"Well, he called you a... begging your pardon, Mr. Courtney, he called you a big, idle, a blood-sucking bastard."
Sean frowned quickly.
"Did he now? What else did he say?"
He said you were a slave owner, that you starved your men. He said that he was going to get even with you sometime." Archie Longworthy took over the telling of it with a note of interrogation in his voice, as he glanced around at the others for support. After a few seconds, there was a guilty nodding of heads and a few murmurs of agreement. Archie took courage from it. "He sort of hinted that he was going to wait for you one night and get even."
"Did he say that in so many words?"
Sean's presence dominated the room with such an obvious air of authority that when Archie looked again for support, he found it in their faces.
"He said, 'One night I'm going to wait for that big bastard, then I'll show him a few things.'"
Archie gave them the exact words. No one protested.
"Well, then what happened?"
"Well, then he sort of picked on young Dirk. 'And here's Courtney's brat,' he said. 'Yellow as his old man, I reckon.'"
"And what did Dirk do?" Sean asked.
"Well, Mr. Courtney, he just laughed, like a gentleman, sort of, nice and friendly. 'Forget it,' he said. 'You've had too much to drink.'"
A sudden thought occurred to Sean.
"Well, what was Dirk doing in here, anyway?"
"Well, it's like this, Mr. Courtney. A few weeks ago, he lent me a couple of pounds. I asked him to call round here tonight so I could give it back to him. That's all it was."
"He wasn't drinking, then?" Sean asked suspiciously.
"Good Lord, no."
Archie was so obviously shocked at the suggestion that Sean nodded.
"All right, then what happened?"
he pursued.
"Well, Norman went on ribbing him, calling him a coward and all that. I can't remember the exact words, but at last young Dirk lost his temper. He walked across and hit him off the stool. Well, I guess Norman deserved that. What do you think, boys?"
Archie looked at them again.
"Yeah, that's right. It's fair made my blood boil to hear him picking on Dirk like that."
The mechanic backed him up. and the others murmured agreement.
Well, then,
Archie took up the tale again. Norman's lying on the floor and pulls out his knife. There was a rustle of astonishment from along the bar. One man opened his mouth and lifted his hand in protest, but suddenly, embarrassed, he carried the gesture through and massaged his neck.
Knife? What knife? Where's it now?
Sean leaned forward eagerly. Standing beside him, Dirk began to smile softly. When he smiled, his face was beautiful.
Here's the knife.
Henry the barman reached under the counter and brought out a large bone-handled clasp knife. Everybody in the room stared at it blandly.
Well, how did it get there?
Sean asked. And now, for the first time, he was aware of the sickly, guilt-ugly faces in front of him. He knew then for certain it was a lie.
I took it off Norman afterwards. We thought it best you should be the first one to know the truth, you being his father and all.
Archie wriggled his shoulders ingratiatingly and smiled around at his witnesses. Slowly, Sean turned to the man nearest to him, the bank clerk.
Is this the knife with which Norman van Eck threatened my son?
Yes, Mr. Courtney,
the man's voice squeaked unnaturally. Sean looked at the man beyond him and repeated the question exactly.
Yes, that's the one, sir. That's it, yes, no doubt about it, that's it.
He asked each man in turn, and each answered the same.
Dirk?
Sean came last to him. He asked it slowly and heavily, looking into the clear, innocent eyes of his son.
As God is your witness, did Norman van Eck draw this knife on you?
Please, my son, deny it now. Say it so they can all hear you. If you value my love, tell me the truth now. Please, Dirk, please, he said to himself. All this he tried to say, tried to convey it with the sheer force of his gaze.
As God is my witness, Pa,
Dirk answered him, and was silent again.
You have not answered, Sean insisted.
Please, please, my son.
He drew that knife from the hip pocket of his overalls. The blade was closed. He opened it with the thumbnail of his left hand, Pa, Dirk explained softly. I tried to kick it out of his hand, but hit his chest instead. He fell onto his back, and I saw him raise the knife as though he were going to throw it. I hit him with the stool. It was the only way I could stop him. All the passion went out of Sean's face. It was stony and hard.
Very well, he said. We'd better get home now.
Then he addressed the rest of the barroom. Thank you, gentlemen. And he walked out through the door to the rolls. Dirk followed him meekly. The next afternoon, Dirk Courtney was released by the local magistrate into his father's custody on bail of £50 pending the visit of the circuit court 2 weeks later, when he was to stand trial on a charge of manslaughter. His case was set down at the head of the court list. The whole district attended the trial, packing the tiny courthouse and clustering at each of its windows. After a retirement of 7 minutes, the jury brought back its verdict, and Dirk, walking out of the dock, was surrounded by the laughing, congratulating crowd and borne out into the sunlight. In the almost deserted courtroom, Sean did not rise from his seat in the front row of chairs. Peter Aronson, the defence lawyer Sean had imported from Pietermaritzburg, shuffled his papers into his briefcase, made a joke with the registrar, and then walked across to Sean.
In and out in 7 minutes exactly. That's one for the record book.
When he smiled, he looked like a koala bear.
Have a cigar, Mr. Courtney.
Sean shook his head, and Peter thrust a disproportionately large cigar into his own mouth and lit it.
I tell you truly, though, I was worried by the knife business. I expected trouble there. I didn't like that knife.
No more did I, Sean agreed softly. And Peter held his head on one side, examining Sean's face with bright bird-like eyes.
But I like those witnesses. A troop of performing seals. Bark, you say to them. Woof, woof, just like magic. Someone trained them pretty well.
I don't think I understand you, Sean said to him grimly, and Peter shrugged.
I'll post my account, but I warn you, I'm going to hit you with a big one. Say 500 guineas?
Sean lay back in his seat, and looked up at the little lawyer.
"Say 500," he agreed.
"Next time you need representation, I recommend a bright youngster, name of Rolf. Humphrey Rolf," Peter went on.
"You think I'll need a lawyer again?"
"With your boy, you'll need a lawyer," Peter told him with certainty.
"And you don't want the job?"
Sean leaned forward with sudden interest.
"At 500 guineas a throw?"
"Money I can get anywhere." Peter took the cigar from his mouth and inspected the fluffy grey ash at its tip. "Remember the name, Mr. Courtney? Humphrey Rolf. He's a bright boy, and not too fussy." He walked away down the aisle, lugging his heavy briefcase, and Sean stood up and followed him slowly. Pausing on the steps of the courthouse, he looked across the square. The centre of a small knot of men, Dirk stood laughing, with Archie Longworthy's arm around his shoulder. Archie's voice carried to where Sean stood.
"Don't let any of you get the idea you can tangle with Dirkie here. You will end up with your teeth busted clean out the back of your head."
Archie grinned so that the blackened tooth showed.
"I say it so you can all hear me. Dirkie here is my friend, and I'm proud of him."
"You alone," thought Sean. He looked at his son and saw how tall he stood, shaped like a man, broad in the shoulders, with muscle in his arms, no fat on the belly, and long legs dropping away clean from hips. "But he's only 16, he's a child. Perhaps there is still time to prevent him setting hard." Then, with truth, he knew he was deceiving himself, and he remembered what a friend had said to him long, long ago. Some grapes grew in the wrong soil, some were diseased before they went to the press, and others were spoiled by a careless vintner. Not all grapes make good wine. "And I am the careless vintner," he thought. Sean walked across the square.
"You're coming home,"
he told Dirk harshly, knowing as he looked at the lovely face that he no longer loved his son. The knowledge nauseated him.
"Congratulations, Colonel. I knew we'd win," Archie Longworthy beamed, and Sean glanced at him. "I'll be in my office 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. I want to talk to you."
"Essa," grinned Archie happily. But he was not grinning when he left Ladyburg on the following evening's train, with a month's pay in lieu of notice to compensate him.